Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, North Bay Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P Futures up 34. Dow Futures up 300. NASDAQ Futures up 108 as we're zing. It's like a sine wave here. Kevin, how are you? I hope you got long on the close last night as you become such a market guru.
I'm just a long kind of guy.
Yes. how many more times are we going to have this? We're going to play this upside call of the China trade thing, or is Matt finally reaching the point that both sides are getting hurt bad enough as China had to raise their...
Sounds like a song title, the upside call on the China trade thing.
Yeah. Well, we could, as you guys are
we
in here...
We need to put some lyrics to that.
Yes. But how many more times China cuts banks' reserve ratio by 1% as the economy slows? The problem with China's reserve ratio is in one man's opinion. I was talking to some of my Fed buddies last night. Is they've driven some of their normal, I'll use it, banking business out of their purview, with a lot of the payday loans and banks off the grid and people making loans overseas getting loans from people overseas in dollars and euros and other things, and I don't know if they have the control over the system as maybe they should, but we will find that out.
Well, you could take the theory that hey, it's just the market working, and the banking system is a restrained market, and in some ways you're better off going that way. Problem is that China tries to run a planned economy, so
yeah,
that's a little bit problematic. Obviously, it's one thing to let the market go, and it's the other thing to say, hey, does it have to be regulated at least to some degree? So, I get both sides of the argument, but in China's case, it's just a non-fit with what they're trying to do.
Well, I don't know that the, I guess the term would be regulated, Kevin, but it's not, I'd use the more term coordinated than regulated, although obviously regulated is part of it with the central bank.
Does coordinating it really work, though?
Non-coordination, I think, absolutely does not work. Let's put it that way. Because it didn't here.
How about if we look at it like this, is that we have laws that that deal with, consumer protection laws, basically. And we've had them forever of all kinds. And we just don't enforce them. And then when something goes wrong, we say, well, let's make some new laws then. And I'm always of a mind of saying, before we go pass new comprehensive legislation, comprehensive is what scares the heck out of me, because that's,
yeah,
in other words, we're saying let's build in all kinds of unintended consequences. Wouldn't it be nice to just step back and review and say, where did we go wrong on the enforcement of what we already have? And maybe we should just do that well.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right.
100% agree.
But you have people, well, this is going to sound awful on a Friday morning, we have people that are bandied about as heroes just by having the job being in law enforcement. And most of them are absolutely not heroes. They're absolutely lazy as all get out. And it's very difficult to even get anybody to go after anybody these days. I mean, it's
let's make sure we're clear when you say law enforcement. You're talking about the regulation people.
Well, but I'm saying who is supposed to enforce
this? You're not talking about, police and
I think
people
I think if you run out of anywhere with a machine that just stole $500 on you and grab a squad car, the guy's going to say, what are you asking me for? Call your insurance company and drive off.
Okay. not my experience, but okay.
I mean, it's reached the point where these people absolutely. I mean, actually, I got a hair up my behind a little bit about that because our girl Jay-Z was telling me last night. She waitresses over at the series where I met the Fed guys, and she must have been going home. It was New Year's Eve or somewhere from either a babysitting job or the job at series, and she'd made like $75, and not to be spill somebody's business on the air, but she's in an Uber, mind her own business. They have one of these state police things, and the guy shines the light in the back of the Uber, gives her a $65 ticket for not having her seatbelt on. Now, this is the same state police that you can have people recklessly driving by you at 100 miles an hour in Orion or on the Stevenson, and not one of these guys has the stones to pull one of these people over, and yet they're gonna find somebody $65, a 21-year-old girl coming home from work in an Uber.
Yeah. So, and I'm with you on that. I'm not willing to take that to most though. I am willing to say that sometimes you have cities who see law enforcement as a tax collection vehicle, rather than true law enforcement and serving and protecting.
I think everybody on the force is, if there's a call, if there's a robbery, if there's something, if you're in trouble, is going to help you out. They're going to do that. They're going to do their job willingly, and it's risky, and we know that. I'm not going there. What I'm saying is, 85% of the crime now, 85% of the policemen could care less about. The idea that somebody breaks into your car in front of your house, call the insurance company, here's the number. I mean, we're talking about not even attempting to make believe you're working in some areas type of thing. And it's really reached a bizarre stage.
But again, not my experience.
Well, in Chicago.
Maybe it's where I live, but someone broke into my garage. Cops came out, no problem. Guess what? They eventually tracked down the people.
You know what? And that used to happen in Evergreen Park.
It
used to happen in Evergreen Park, too. I mean, if somebody messed with your car, they were there in a second. Those were things that people cared about. I'm sure in Orland, same thing. If somebody runs through your backyard, it looks suspicious, the guy's there in a nanosecond. Chicago's just gotten, I don't even know, I've gotten myself so bitter about a lot of things living in the city. I don't know if I'll ever change, Kevin. But yet you're right. If you call somebody in Orland, the guy's there in a nanosecond, or a lady. So I misspoke earlier. Hey, let's back up a second to the reserve requirement. When we talk about banks here.
By the way, sorry, Chief, before you get into that, Illinois law, which I did not know this, and I don't think you knew this, requires all drivers and passengers, front and back seat, age 8 and above, to wear safety belts.
Really?
Yes. My entire life, I thought that back seat was optional. Front seat was required. And I don't know when that changed.
Why did the guy say that if she was in a cab, it would have been okay?
It might have been okay with him, with Illinois law.
Thanks for getting me on the technicality. Good job, buddy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's okay.
Just wanted to throw that out there, because I thought it was preposterous that she would get a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt in the back seat. Turns out that that is against Illinois law, assuming Jay-Z is above 8 years old, which I think she is.
Yeah, so now, if you two...
But she's a youthful-looking young woman.
Yes. If you two slugs are riding in the back seat of the Suburban, and we get pulled over, you get the ticket, not me?
Apparently.
That's wild.
I vote for you getting it, Tom.
I'm sure you would.
Yes. I would pass it along to you also, blaming your vehicle.
Yes. Why blame my vehicle?
Well, I would at least try to
say that they said they didn't have any back there.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is possible.
The seatbelts.
Just trying to weasel out of this. Don't worry. Don't make anything of it more than it is.
Exactly. So go back to your point. Sorry to interrupt, but
we kind of glossed over that reserve requirement real quick. What a reserve requirement is, and we talk about central bank and other people. So let's go back to Ponderosa days, Ben Cartwright, Virginia City. If everybody in Virginia City puts their money in the bank, okay, and everybody puts $1,000 in there, 10 people, now you got 10 grand in there, the money supply is $10,000, okay, because that's what's on demand deposit at the Virginia City Bank. If they give a loan to Matt Weber for $1,000 and he puts the loan back in there, how much is the money supply? Is now $11,000, because the first people can take out 10 and Matt can take out 1. So it's actually 11. So you've raised your money supply by $1,000. That's right. Why
they're just counting on you. Just to be clear, they're just counting on neither one of you is going to draw down your account to zero.
Right. Well, they're not everyone. All 11,000 is not coming in to grab it the same day. But now they. So how much can they lend out? So that's where the reserve requirement comes in. The bank says, or the central bank says, you can only lend out to 80% of the money you have in there. Okay, so now you've got 10,000 in there. You can only lend out 8. You can't lend out the whole 10. Okay, so that's the reserve requirement. You have to keep a reserve of 20%. Now, so when one of the most powerful tools of monetary policy, and one that's used very seldom, one that's used the most often, is the funds market, where the bank enters, either brings money into the system or pulls it out vis-a-vis the open market window. If they buy $1 million worth of T-bills, they essentially put that money into the system, okay, and pull the T-bill out. Or if they sell the T-bill, they drag $1 million out of the system. So they essentially keep the water in the pool using the open market thing. If they really have a problem, they can change the reserve requirement. You can only imagine what happened to the Virginia City Bank if all of a sudden they got 80% of the money's out there and they come in and say, well, within a week you got to drag it down to 70%. Well, then all of a sudden they either better get some more assets. Of course, they'd never do 10% that quick. But it makes a big difference in how much you can loan. Imagine that nationwide. So a move in the reserve requirement is probably the most sledgehammer approach that a central bank can take. So for China to do that, it means they're a little bit scared, Kevin. And it also means that they're going to allow their banks to essentially fund into what I consider to be their payday loan and all their other problems over there. So they're going to allow the banks, 1% of all the money in China being able to let out is a lot of dough that you can now lend out to save these other people if they need to be saved, for lack of a better term. Is that somewhat clear or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Manny, you see?
So we're good.
Yeah.
And they are in a bit of a panic mode.
But now they are also trying to do something, which is means that the market has bounced back dramatically from yesterday. And yesterday was a really, really ugly day. And now you look at a company like Apple, and it's interesting. I gave that kind of talk last week about the gentleman who traced the market turn to October 3rd, and Chairman Powell's offhanded comment about we're kind of a long ways away or something like that from what I consider to be neutral. And then he's kind of backed off on that, but that's what he said on the 3rd. That's the day that Apple reached 233, and the thing's down like $80 from that day. And $80 is $440 billion in market cap. And, you know, and this is the weird part, Kevin. In the last 3 years, these guys have bought, instead of giving out a dividend to people, which, you know, has always been my choice, they've bought back 250 million shares every year for the last 3 years. They only have five billion shares outstanding. They used to, 10 years ago, they had like 6.5. So in the last year, they bought 250 million shares. It prices probably way higher, say $200. How good of a trade was that?
Well, they were just investing in their own company.
Somehow explain to me how if you don't want to be an Apple shareholder anymore and they buy you out, how's that returning money to shareholders?
Yeah, I know. What they are doing, obviously, was propping up their stock price artificially. So good, they did, and the bubble burst.
Yeah.
They created their own bubble, and it burst.
Yep.
You know, they have other huge problems. The biggest one being that the market has changed on them, and I don't know that they were ready for that. The big difference is people have gotten away from the 2-year and 3-year cell phone plans. And that was how iPhones got sold, because those things are incredibly expensive. When you're making, $900, $1,000 phones, well, the reason people were buying them is because they were subsidized. You got it cheap or free as part of signing up for a long-term deal. And now that there are so many competitors out there who are just taking, month to month and doing it for less money than what we've been paying before, No commitment beyond the end of the, you know, beyond the next renewal period. And
I use Ting,
and it rides over mine rides over AT&T. No, mine rides over Verizon, and I think my daughter's, because she has an iPhone, rides over AT&T. And so you get the quality of service. It's not like you're getting a lesser product. And now people can't sell you iPhones as part of a bundle into a 2 or 3 year deal, you know, a 2 or 3 year commitment to stay with their service. And so now, without the subsidy, people aren't buying as many iPhones.
Well, I use Ting. I don't know how I got on those guys, but they use Sprint, and it's their big shtick is they don't have the unlimited download plan, but which I of course would never use. So, but their big shtick is every additional phone is only $6, and they're all just combined together. So, and I guess that we go out on Sprint, but the so when I got I finally got, you know, a phone in addition to my flip phone, I kept the flip phone, so it's only $6. So if you just throw it in a car, so you always have it with you no matter what, you know, and you don't have to charge a darn thing once every couple of weeks, then why would you dump it for $6, right, Kevin, if you already owned it? And
right. What they need to do next is give you a phone number that rings both phones.
That would be very nice.
You only have to have one.
That would be very nice. But what I'm saying
is Google Voice can do it. Any carrier can do it.
But it's a whole different world when they say, here's the plan, you buy the phone. And then it'll say Shop Ting, and you go in there, and I'm just agreeing with what you were saying. You can get, like, you know, the Samsung, or, you know, whatever, like a 7, not their latest, which is darn near as expensive as the Apple. And you sit there and you go, God, this thing's $400 or $300, and the Apple's a G. Then the new fancy Samsung is actually like $1,100 or $1,050. You sit there and go, man, oh man, that's a big number to write. You're saying that you're right. They mixed them all together before, and you didn't know what you were paying. But now, if you sit there and go, okay, here's your plan. It's going to cost you $40, like you're saying. And by the way, here's the phone. Here's a perfectly good one, Maddie. What do you use and Audrey use? Like a Samsung 6 or 7 or something?
I have the Galaxy S, either 8 or 9.
Okay, so but I mean, what's the 10 or 11s like? 3 times expensive?
I have the 8. I think there's a 9 out right now for these. I don't know if there's a 10.
Okay.
But yeah, it's obviously when these first come out, they're $600 or whatever they are, and then they go down relatively quickly, and the next year the next one comes out and replaces it.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was a situation before where they're saying every time a new phone came out, a new iPhone, for example, or they did it with the Galaxies too, but they weren't as expensive. They'd say, you know, get a new phone and just give us a new two-year commitment, and you can upgrade to the new iPhone. Well, and so people were pouncing all over every time an iPhone rolled out. People were jumping on it, and they're not doing that anymore. That's a kind of a sea change in the carrier market that has affected the product, and Apple's not ready for that.
Well, the difference in 90 bazillion people keeping their phones 2 years and keeping their phones 2 years, 2 months is dramatic, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the interesting part of when I, you know, debate, discuss things with younger people, not just younger people, but I'll, you know, debate myself in front of the mirror. But when these things start to happen, Kevin.
That's what the kids are calling it today.
Yeah, yeah. But how, the interesting part is this happens. You never know when it's going to happen, and it happens dramatically quickly. And a lot of stuff like this. I mean, you look at the Amazon situation. I'm going to say eBay was almost like that for a while. You didn't short eBay.
eBay was. Yeah. eBay had the market.
Yeah.
Period.
But you couldn't short eBay. I mean, I kept looking at this thing, and one time I went through, did some calculations, and I'm thinking, boy, for this stock to be worth where it was trading at the time, every man, woman, and child in the nation had it would have to do two eBay trades a day. Then all of a sudden, one day, the thing out of the blue was now, hey, well, this thing's nothing but a retailer, and we're going to price him like a retailer and not this, you know, incredible visionary. And, you know, the stock went from wherever to wherever. Now it's settled in there, and, you know, they do a nice job, and they make money, and it's a regular old stock. But it happens. You have no idea when or how it's going to happen until finally one day everybody goes, What are you pricing those guys like that for? They're like this, or yeah, these guys are selling iPhones every 2 years, or even the automobiles here. You had to buy a car every 3 years. Now you got to buy one every 10 years. I mean, when this all changes, but it changes. It's never gradual, Kevin. It's like you keep walking one direction until you bang your nose into a wall and you turn and go another way. But it's one of the most enlightening and most interesting things about the economy and companies and the stock market that makes it incredibly interesting to be involved in. This is one of the things. And then if you could put the day on it, you'd say, you know, you'd be a rich man. But how could you? But how would you know that last October, all of a sudden people are going to, enough was going to change at Apple to where people are going to look at it just a little differently, and all of a sudden they decide they're not going to give guidance on phones. So then they let their suppliers essentially give the guidance, which the guidance looks like, you know, crap. So all of a sudden the stock is down, you know, $60. Then they finally come out and say, yeah, these guys were right, and I don't know, the first day of the new year, damn near, oh, by the way, instead of 93 million, we're going to do 84. God, Kevin, that's a real number when you're talking a difference in nine. I mean, these guys in the last month and a half have essentially lost the Facebook in value. But these are huge numbers.
It is incredible. It probably, you know, especially with hindsight, it was predictable.
But, it always is, but when?
With hindsight, it was predictable, but it was probably predictable at the time. The minute you started to see, you know, the third, the fourth, the fifth discount carrier, and all of a sudden you say, things are getting some momentum here, what's the impact? And I think that's the part we as a macro economy are not very good at.
Well, if you, all the stuff was probably there, I'm going to say the thing turned on October 3rd. It was high. It was 233 and change. I'm going to say that everything that we just talked about, if you'd have had your nose to the grindstone, was probably getting increasingly obvious in February, March. And if we would have started buying puts, or God help us, shorted the stock there, I'd bet we'd have taken it where the sun don't shine for $30 before we were, quote, proven to be correct. We'd have been right, Kevin, we'd have been way early. And we'd look back at it and say, why didn't we wait until October 1st? You know, or October 2nd?
So what you're saying is you'd have to really believe you're right.
Yeah, and you got to be willing to hang in there. When we first started the way back in the day, talk about an interesting story. If you see Fast Money on CNBC, that was essentially our show, for lack of a better term, or Dr. J's show. And I'll say it was Jan. Jan sort of invented it. And we went over to Weigel Broadcasting every Tuesday night, and it was traders on TV. It was very it was basically modeled after sports writers on TV. That became a huge show.
Yeah, I remember that show.
Yeah, well, and that was the same guys who did that. That actually was from the guys who originally did sports writers on TV were guys on the trading floor. The heck was the guy's name? But Freddie Wheaties, Tony House, a couple guys that I traded with in the OEX. When the cable first came out, they were dying to fill these sports channels up, right, man? I mean, if you were willing to go in the studio, like, basically you were at. So these guys went in and they were traders talking about sports, because people that were fanatic about sports were guys that were traders on the trading floor. I mean, they went to all the Bulls games, went to all the Hawks games. I mean, it was a big deal. And virtually all of them played basketball, softball, I mean, you name it. And, they had this thing. The four guys went out one night a week and sat in front of the camera for 2 hours and basically BS'd about sports. And amazingly knowledgeable. It's like having four Matty Webbers sitting there. You know, better than the guys who are making a living at it. Pretty much like Matty was always better in the sports channel, I thought, than the other guys. But anyway, my opinion is, shall we say, clouded. But anyway, so the guy kept the show when those guys all quit, and he said, okay, let's have real sports writers. And that's when they got Jerome Holzman, Ben Bentley, and Talander. Who was the other guy? Bill Jouse. Right, Manny?
Bill Jouse, yeah.
And then, so those guys got on. That show was a huge hit for what? They all sit there and smoke cigars and talk sports. And it was a hit for what? 5 years? Before one of the guys died or whatever? And that's the one that Dylan Radigan spotted and said, I can do this for option traders and things and put them on national TV and talk about real traders. And what are you doing today? What about this stock? Are you buying it or are you selling it? Anyway, we did something like that. And one of the guys in the group was absolutely convinced that this Tenet Healthcare was going basically in a rat hole. The guy's name was, I'll think of the guy's name. some Armenian dude, buddy of Dr. J's. He had his family had all kinds of money, and he was managing his family's money. He started shorting this in about 25 hours, Kevin. It went to maybe 62 to finally throw in the towel. And then it ended up going back to build houses because he blew through his entire family's, several $1 million. And 2 years later, stock was six. He was right all along. The place was nothing but a Ponzi scheme or whatever. And yet he took it up to behind for $40 before it started going his way. You know, timing is amazingly important. And I'm going to say in my, years in the business, I'm very seldom wrong, Kevin. But boy, oh boy, I am early all the time. And that's almost more dangerous than being wrong. It really is. Because you get in, it starts going against you, you get out, and all of a sudden, not only were you right, but you lost money on the deal on top of it. And nothing is more frustrating. But anyway, S&P futures up 33, Dow futures up 290, NASDAQ futures up 103, making back pretty much what we lost yesterday. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks, maybe half.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Mowley, from Matt Weber on the board, Kevin O'Neill. Hey, the conversation we just had regarding reserve requirements and so forth. Just so happens, Bloomberg must have been listening to our conversation, helped us out. A cut of 1% in the discount, in the reserve requirement in China frees up $116 billion worth of liquidity slash money to be loaned. Now, that's fine, except one of the things that we've been, one of the themes I think of the show is that one of the issues that the economy has right now between 2008 and now is we had a debt problem, and now we've solved it by even more debt. So what China is allowing their banks to do now is to loan out $116 billion more to other places, maybe payday loans and so forth, that have problems, and all you're doing is shifting the money over in a lot of respects. So whether it's a solution or not, I don't know. It's a short-term safety valve, let's put it that way. S&P futures up 33, Dow futures up 290, NASDAQ futures up 103, roughly half of yesterday's demise. We'll see if we can keep it going or we'll see if we can go higher. It'd be nice if we could even go higher. Yesterday was ugly. DAX up 185, 1.8%. FTSE up 88, 1.3. DAC around up 59, 1.3 over in Asia. At least that guy's opened up. Well, Nikkei maybe was already closed by the time some of this happened. They're down 452, 19,561. Lowest we've seen in quite a while. It's 2.1%. Shanghai, however, is up 50 points. I think they're about an hour more this way. That's 2%. Hang Seng up 561, 2%. So the talks are back on, and we've played this card maybe, what, 4, 5, 10 times now? Talks are back on. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, when is it going to stop moving the market?
That's when's it going to stop is right. Oil up a dollar, 48.16. Brent up a dollar 36, 57.31. Natural gas back over $3, 3.01. Although the weather here is going to be warm for the next week or so, although that's Maddie's job. Gold we got down $1.50, but still 12.93. Silver 15.76. We'll see if it makes it to 16. Copper's actually up 5 cents. There's a little bit of a reaction there. These trade talks actually come to fruition. Copper should go back up. We'll see about that. Maddie, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. As it's been all week, we're nice and quiet, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues whatsoever on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways all looking good. Everyone behaving themselves and light traffic volumes as folks are still off work in some cases. Kids are out of school, and it's probably the last great travel day that we'll have over the holiday season. So enjoy it this morning if you're heading in. It should be nice and easy. Only areas of concern out in western suburban Wheaton, we have a closure at Roosevelt Road between Woodlawn and Gables Boulevard due to a water main break. That's causing an issue out there. And just north of there in Elgin, Larkin Avenue at Airlight Street, there is a crash causing delays. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, a beautiful day and beautiful weekend in store. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 46, which is well above normal. Right now it's crystal clear and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 65 today. Right now it's clear and 35. In sports, Blackhawks have been playing a little bit better of late, but they lost in overtime last night to the Islanders 3-2. Coyotes were off, Bulls were off as well, same with the Suns, but the Bulls were active off the court, trading guard Justin Holliday to the Grizzlies for Marshawn Brooks, Wayne Seldon, and two first-round picks. Because of the increase in players, they had to cut a guy, so they waived Cameron Payne, who they had acquired from Oklahoma City last season. College hoops, Illinois had a 10-point first-half lead in Indiana, only to blow it. They lost to the Hoosiers 73-65. Arizona State lost to Utah 96-86. Arizona beat Colorado 64-56. Chief.
Wasn't Holiday the guy they originally got from the Timberwolves?
They traded him to the Grizzlies.
Okay.
I'm not sure where they got Holiday from. I don't think he was the Timberwolves. It could have been.
Was he playing at all?
He was playing the beginning part of the year. He was starting. And he was actually a decent asset. He's a guy that can score. And guys that can score will always have a place in the NBA. And he can shoot and he can score. But you know, he's not like a great player or anything. He's probably a decent sixth man on a good team or seventh man. And the Grizzlies are fighting for a playoff spot.
Who's the guy who's hurt?
Which everyone's been hurt.
Oh, but the guy who's out for, like, you know, the good guy who was out.
Lauri Markkanen missed the first.
No, the guy's not back yet.
Well, Denzel Valentine, yeah, he's out for the year.
Okay, that's who you're talking about.
Yeah, and then Bobby Portis is out now. He'll be back shortly. They finally got Markkanen, Levine, Carter, and Dunn all healthy at the same time, which hasn't happened all year, and so they were somewhat watchable for a couple of games, and then the other night I actually turned them on because I was like, you know, they're playing a little better. They got their core guys back. Maybe I'll check them out. They're at home against the Magic, who are not good, and they lost by 20 to the Magic.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that. I was like,
okay, well, never mind.
There's no defense.
There really isn't. You know, that's, you can sort of get away with that if you're a great scoring team, but they're not that either. So,
God. All right. So while we're on it, we've talked enough about central banks. But you know, one thing
I will never talk enough about central banks.
Well, what's his name talking today? Paul is going to save the day again. But thing of it is, Kevin, when these things start to happen, it's never usually like one person's fault. I mean, they you know, they talk about the Great Depression was the Smoot-Hawley tariffs, but agriculture had been in a recession, deep recession for a decade. Stuff has happened. I mean, the debt load is getting big worldwide. We tried to fix debt with more debt. Now China's doing it again today, and it's an easy fix. You don't ever not do it. You always find a way to refinance something. And yet they're all kind of patchwork. And until you get some kind of a real growth or a real thing going, you just never seem to come out of it. I don't think we ever came out of this last one. It depends on the people. And somebody, I was somewhere with some, you know, somebody had some high-end economist guy for some place, and he says, well, where do you get your information? You're always, like, disagreeing with these numbers. I said, I have probably 10 people in various walks of life, in various slots in the economic, shall we say, strata, people that are entrepreneurs, people that are salaried, people that are salaried with hospitalization, people that are salaried without hospitalization. And I just look at those 10 people, and I see how they're doing and how life is buffeting them around economically. And that's important to me. And the numbers are just numbers. You can't just look at one person because, you know, their company might be screwing, we're not getting raised, other people are. But if you take a sampling of like 10 or 12 in all different walks, and even in some different states, although I admit I get jaded by this Chicago, Illinois experience, unfortunately, that's where I look, which I think is different than most, Kevin. I mean, I think you're sort of on the same page, even though you never admit you did the same thing I do.
Well, I do, but you've heard me say this before. I look at the microeconomies because there are pockets of, you know, of booming areas,
yes,
and there are you know, there's others that are healthy, and then there's others that are not doing as well. And I think a lot of that has to do with local government. A lot of it has to do with, you know, national government too. I mean, it's not like that doesn't have an effect, but local governments can do a lot to affect the business climate where they are.
I would absolutely agree with you, but I think you can get yourself,
and that's part of it. Part of it is the local business community too, and that's, you know, and you're getting that in the small cities way more than you're getting it in the big cities, because they have a way of churning, you know. You have international businesses that still go out of their way to do as much business locally as they can, and that's a very, very successful business model. Is when, you know, when local business is out there, you know, doing business with each other and keeping money in the community.
I would say I would agree with that. We had the one guest from maybe what's his name? He did the when you said Teflon, he wanted to throw a knife at you through the blind, but he was
I remember the guy that does the
coatings
cookware stuff.
Cookware coatings. He said he liked nothing better than having a nice big factory out in Westmont, where he was from. But since all the guys that made the pots were in China, he had to be in China. He didn't want to be. You know, so, I mean, a lot of that has happened. I'd like to see some of that back here. I think it's even more... Well, Kevin, I tell you, the one time I bought the truck out in Rhode Island. Anyway, I stopped at this hotel in Pennsylvania, and it was like Humphrey Bogart in a movie. Everybody in the bar was halfway between Chicago and New York or Boston, because it's basically right in the middle. And I ran into this guy who was a city manager in Pennsylvania. And he was a city manager for two of these smaller towns like you're talking about, and he was on the board of like three others. He said, "You have no idea the disparity between the different towns." He goes, "Some boards have kept the pension just right, and they've got, you know, 10 people on police and fire that are on pension, and some people from the schools, and they got everything paid up to the last nickel. And the town right next to them, you couldn't tell the difference in the two towns. Everything is in a bleeper, because, you know, they paid guys too much, they never saved, and this town's a disaster." I mean, you're right. I mean, it is very uneven in terms
of...
Well,
and it's, you know, there's a crony aspect to that, too.
Yes.
That is just, you know, is really critical to making it happen and making it work for a while until it doesn't work anymore.
Well, right. But I think one of the things that has been consistent, I'm not going to say in our whole lifetime, but certainly in the last 5 or 10 years, somehow, we have to stop this continual consolidation in industries where, in my mind, it's economically not justifiable. I mean, I think Celgene is plenty big enough to operate on their own. They don't need Bristol-Myers. And we're going to end up with industries where, I mean, I was talking to the Fed guys last night, and what are they, with one of the guys was really bright, he goes, I was talking about the banks, and I said, you know, the problem is that you guys, your job has shifted from protecting the system to protecting, you know, the 5 or 6 big banks that are left. And he said, well, that, what do you use the word? He's like, the cartelization of industry after industry in our society is just a fact we're dealing with. I mean what can we do? We can't exactly screw Citigroup and Bank of America on the same day. They're half the banking system. You know, I mean, it's that I'm not sure. I think they're part of it getting that way, but now they're dealing with it, and I think it's a problem, Kevin. I mean, how many jobs are going to be lost in this Bristol Myers Celgene thing for no reason, in my mind, other than, you know, somebody gets to raise prices and lay off people.
And to the extent there are some efficiencies, that's fine. But are they market efficiencies or just business efficiencies? Because by law we're supposed to protect markets in this country.
But we've decided we're not going to.
But we don't. Yes,
yeah.
Correct.
Which leads us back to let's talk about football. I'm actually, you guys know, I'm not Mr. NFL, but I think this is about as even a group of teams coming into the playoffs this year as I think I've ever seen. Or am I just...
It may be. You know, this is the fun weekend. One of the most... It's replaced New Year's Day, which used to be the greatest sports day ever.
Yep, I agree.
And now it's just a bunch of meaningless games. And so I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to bowls. But this Saturday and Sunday, the games, yes, there's a lot of even matchups. The NFL doesn't have that many blowouts anyway, especially when two good teams play. But it's just a couple of days of really good, entertaining, meaningful football. And I think the dice could roll a lot of different ways on this leading in the next weekend, and then we'll see what happens.
Kevin, let me ask you a question about the colleges, though. I mean, we don't want to accuse each other of having Maddie play the Mayberry song, but when you and I were, when I was a freshman, you weren't there yet. Kevin was 2 years behind me, for full disclosure.
Yeah, I'm young. Tom's old.
Well, Kevin's older brother and I were roommates.
He's old too.
Yes, he's old too. Anyway, but in those days, my freshman year, I went down to see, the old man gave me the car for some reason, and off we went to Dallas. I-57 had just opened all the way down. Well, actually, it wasn't all the way down because they hadn't finished the bridge over the Ohio River yet. It just opened like a week before. Otherwise, I don't know how the hell you got down to Dallas from Chicago. I'm sure there was a way. Probably had to take, 66 to St. Louis, and then, anyway. So we go down there, and it was, the New Year's Day was a huge deal. And my question is, Kevin, why? Because the national champions were already decided before the bowls. But you had
when we were in school time, it was only the AP that did it that way.
Well, I'm saying I think my freshman year was
the
last year.
They had things like the MacArthur Bowl, or the MacArthur Cup or whatever it was that they awarded the national champions, and that was held until after the bowls.
Was the AP and the UPI, right? Was it or the Associated Press?
Yeah, those were the bigger polls, but there were a bunch of others as well. And the AP didn't get on board with bowl games affecting the outcome of the national championship until well into the 70s. But but most people didn't. Only Alabama claims the 73 national championship,
right?
Because the AP. The AP claimed them or gave them that at the end of the
But I'm saying that the bowls didn't necessarily match up 1 and 2. I mean, but I agree with you. It was a spectacular day. My question is why? I mean, because a lot of the games were, Navy played somebody in the Cotton Bowl. I remember couldn't wait to watch it because, obviously Roger Staubach was playing for Navy and he was a national phenom. But, I couldn't wait to watch it. But a lot of those were...
Because the dominoes could fall over the course of the day.
That's
and
true.
We saw that in... I'll remember it because it's Notre Dame, so I apologize. I know it's done this for other teams as well, but we saw it fall New Year's Day in 70, I want to say 77, when Joe Montana was Notre Dame's quarterback, and they went into the New Year's Day Bowls number 5 and came out of it as the national champions because they beat Texas. And it seems to me the Big Ten, you're not going to believe this, but the Big Ten team lost in the Rose Bowl, whoever was ranked ahead of Notre Dame.
Yeah, imagine that.
I don't know if it was Ohio State or Michigan. And then Oklahoma lost in the Orange Bowl game that night, and, so the dominoes fell just perfectly. And it wasn't always that many teams. It wasn't always a team going from 5-1, but it wasn't unusual for a team, to go from 3-1 or to need a couple of games to fall their way as well as them winning their own game. It was just fun. And, so it would be basically hole up, turn on the TV, have a lot of food ready, and sit there and eat and drink and watch football all day. And now it's like intermittently watch football and take a nap. So this weekend is kind of the substitute for that, where you get several games in a row that matter.
Well, a couple points on that. One, I 100% agree. This weekend is awesome and way better than any college football weekend. Although I never liked college football as much as pro football, but what you're describing actually does sound pretty good. Secondly, I would agree with Chief. This particular weekend has 4 really good teams in it, which sometimes it doesn't. Or I should say 8 really good teams.
Yeah,
good games. Sometimes, like last year, for example, you would have an 8-8 team in there. You would have a Bills versus Jaguars matchup that was like 10-7 and it was horrific. There's none of that this weekend. I mean, all 8
of
these.
We actually knocked out some pretty good teams last week.
That's true, actually. 8 teams here play, obviously, this weekend, 4 games. I wouldn't be surprised if any one of these 8 teams made it to a conference championship or even the Super Bowl.
Well, if you look at somebody did a study the other day. He had a name for it. Of course, I forgot it. He had the season, which is the 16 games. What did he call it? He called it either the play-in or the rip-in or something, the final 10 games. And if you look at some of the teams in here, like the Bears have a really good record and they're playing the Eagles, barely snuck in. If you look at the last 10 games, the Eagles are formidable, or the last 6 games.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So I think they had to go something like 6-1 to get in, or 5-1, 6-2, something like that to get in down the stretch.
Well, the Cowboys, they were yawners early in the year. They're not anymore. I don't think.
Same exact thing. Yeah. I think they started out like 3-5 or something like that, and finished 10-6.
Yeah, if you wipe out the first 6 games, these teams all look kind of a lot different coming in. And it shows, actually, the Chiefs are like, they're like the sixth seed if you look at the last 10 weeks.
Right. And, I would put the Seahawks in that category too, where they were kind of a slow starting team. The Bears beat the crap out of them earlier in the year. Now they're just as good as anyone. No one wants to play them.
Now, why is that? Do they have people come back, or they just get better?
They got better. They had a really young team around Russell Wilson and a defense of that, you know, their whole legion of boom, back end of their defense that won a Super Bowl and should have won a second one. They blew it at the end against New England.
You're not kidding about the blowing it there.
Yeah, all those guys are gone. They're, you know, either traded or hurt or out of the league. And they were really rebuilding their defense kind of on the fly with a lot of younger guys. And meanwhile, they had, you know, their top receiver had been in and out of the lineup with injury. And Russell Wilson was kind of feeling it out with this running game and these new receivers. And it's really clicked in the second half of the year. And no one wants to play them either. And no one would be surprised at all if they won at Dallas.
I'll tell you this. I never watch these guys, but last week they just happened to be on, and I'm sitting there with nothing to do, and Kevin had been telling me how well the guy from Notre Dame's playing, the guard at Indianapolis. Jeez, I don't think anyone wants to play them either.
Quentin Nelson, yeah.
No one wants to play them. That's another team that, you know, Luck is back. They beefed up the offensive line specifically to protect him because he's been getting hurt every season with a horrible offensive line in front of him, and now they have a formidable offensive line. He's been healthy, and he's been great, and they're very good. And they won at Houston a few weeks ago, and now they go down there again, and Houston's a one-point favorite. I think that opened at 3, and it's been bet all the way down to a one-point spread. Dallas is a two-point favorite over the Seahawks. That opened at 3. The Ravens, who is a team we haven't mentioned, who once Joe Flacco went out and they brought in their first-round pick, Lamar Jackson, who was a more of a run first quarterback out of Louisville, they're like 6-1 in their last 7. Yeah. So your last 10 game theory applies to them maybe more than anyone. They could go on a run. They're scary. They play a really unique style, and they run the ball and they play really good defense. They beat the Chargers in LA a couple of weeks ago. Now they host them, and all of a sudden the Ravens are 3-point favorites over the Chargers, who won 12 games this year. And then the Bears is the only line that's actually somewhat of a big line. The Bears are 6.5-point favorites over the Eagles. All the other games are 3 points or less.
Kevin was a former defensive lineman. Did you go both ways in high school, or just one side?
Excuse me?
Did you play both sides of the football? I'll rephrase that. Instead of saying, could you
yeah,
go
thank
both?
You. Yeah, actually, when I was in high school, we had a three-man tackle rotation, and so we would rotate it around offense and defense, playing both ways. Now, I happened to the other two happened to be one of both had Big Ten scholarships, and both of them, how to say it, one made first team all state and the other was like an honorable mention all state. So
then I
was the 3 in the 3-man rotation.
Yes. Well, it's okay. My question is the we've seen, I mean football does change from certainly from decade to decade, but I noticed it a lot more because I was watching the line play, because I was watching the guy from Notre Dame. It seems like the Bears are doing a lot of this too, where your guards now, instead of being basically big, huge, fat guys that had to deal with the who was the Washington, the guy in the Bear, the guy in the Bears was like 340.
Ted Washington. Yeah,
we had you had the 4-3 defenses. Well, now everybody went to these 3-4s, and it seems like what people are doing is they'll double team the nose guard real quick, and then the guard is fast enough, and he's not as big, not as fat as he used to be, lack of a better term. He goes, fires out, and his next block is in the second level or third level, like and as Nelson seems to be like the best guy in football at doing that. Long is pretty good at that too, when he doesn't have a bad ankle. But I'm saying, is that going to mean, you think, that the defenses shift back to a 4-3? Because it seems like that now the offensive lines have learned how to deal with this two level, where they give the initial double team block, push the nose guard out of the way, and then the guy fires right out at the linebacker, and he's 30 pounds heavier than a linebacker, and it seems like it's pretty darn effective. I think you're talking about what the Baltimore team is doing, Matty. When you look at these guards, they're 30 pounds lighter than they were, seems to me, or at least they're faster than they were 10 years ago, because they're not just dealing with a big fat guy across from them. Or am I missing something here?
No, I think you're right. I think what that's been the way it is for quite a while now in pro football is, you know, offenses make changes, defense adapts. Offense makes new changes, defense adapts. Or, you know, or you can call it the other way, that the offense is adapting to the defenses. Doesn't matter, but it goes back and forth, and it makes it hard to compare eras.
Yes.
But and some of that's the rules too. I mean, right now the rules are so in favor of passing and quick passing, because you're not allowed to cover anybody after 5 yards. I think you're right, and I think you're starting to see some changes, and it'll change back. You know, they'll adapt to each other, and that's kind of the fun of watching football over a period of time.
Well, it seems like a Tom Thayer, who was a very mobile, strong but mobile guard, for 10 years would not have been the guy you just had leaning up against Ted Washington the whole game. But now Tom Thayer would be valued again because he could move. It seems. People like come and go, or am I wrong with that?
I think you're probably right about that. By the way, we only have 30 seconds. I'd like to get your guys' predictions heading into the weekend. So, real quick, Texans, Colts. I'm writing these down.
I like the Colts.
Colts. All right, you guys both like the Colts. Seahawks at Cowboys.
I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Seahawks.
Both like Seahawks. Okay, that's the Saturday games. Then the Sunday games. First game is Chargers at Ravens.
There's a tough one.
Chargers. No, Ravens. It's a home game.
I'm going to say Chargers.
Okay, Kevin likes the Ravens. Chief likes the Chargers. And then lastly, the beloved, the Bears.
I said Bears win, but do not cover.
Bears win, but don't cover. Kevin.
I say Bears win and cover.
Bears win and cover.
See, my mother told me, don't ever bet on the Bears or Notre Dame. You're betting with your heart, not with your head.
I like Colts.
Well, yeah, I'm not putting money on that. Right. I'm not a bettor, so.
I like Colts.
That's no problem.
I like Colts. I like Seahawks. So I'm in agreement with you guys on the Saturday games, which is both road teams, by the way. And then Sunday, I got to go with the veteran quarterback, Phil Rivers, and the Chargers, and then I'm going Bears. So I guess I agree with Chief, which is scary.
Yeah,
so we'll probably go 0-4, Chief.
Well, I want to see the Chargers.
You've
have
been
to,
dragged into the vortex.
I want to see the Chargers hosting a game in a soccer stadium for, like, the big playoffs. Kevin, thank you very much, bud. SP Futures still up 33. We'll be right back, Mr. Wayne Madsen. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 30. Dow futures up 284. S&P is up 85, which is less than when we came in, but it's pushing about halfway of what we were down yesterday. A rally of this size, and only to have to say it's halfway of what we sold off yesterday, not really a good sign. In a half hour, we're going to have the labor number, which nobody's talking about this week. They're talking about 180,000, but now it's coming after a supply number ISM survey yesterday that was appreciably lower than expected. Came in at 54 versus 59, so that was kind of a thud. Wayne, how are you, buddy?
Very good. Happy New Year.
You too. Is there any chance of it? Well, there is for you and me, but is there any chance of it being for the market?
Well, I know one thing. I don't want to look at my 401k just yet.
I assume you have no puts?
No.
Why would anybody want puts? We've done nothing but go straight up for 8 years, and everybody on TV tells me just buy and hold.
Right. Well, I think what we're seeing here is, I'm not no expert certainly, but I don't think long government shutdowns where it's kind of a rolling shutdown because now more and more agencies will be affected as they run out of money. And the tariffs. I mean, I feel for the poor farmers right now. They took a bath on their sales overseas to China. And now they're not going to get their agriculture subsidies that were promised to them by Trump. So, they're going to get hit by both sides.
I don't feel bad for them at all. They voted for this. They're the ones that voted for this. Enjoy.
Oh well, no, yeah, exactly. I agree with you there. But sometimes it takes a real episode to get people, thinking straight. And this may be the thing that does it. I mean, I remember when the Prairie States not only voted solidly Democratic, but voted for people who were very progressive in the Democratic Party. And I think what changed that is, unfortunately, Fox News.
Well, you're not going to see an Adlai Stevenson again. You're not going to see a Paul Simon. People
or George McGovern, yeah, who, remember, was from South Dakota. And,
yep.
We had, like I say, even some Republicans like George Norris in Nebraska was extremely progressive and supported FDR's New Deal, and he was a Republican.
Well, I always liked Chuck Percy. I always liked, yep. I mean, I actually liked Peter Fitzgerald. But he was in there one term and he said, the hell with this. We've got these, but the thing that if you, when you start with the, my first episode with this in my lifetime, Wayne, was the savings and loan fiasco, the Resolution Trust. And because I had a client that was deeply involved in that in Arizona, I read more about it than I should have. And if you read about it, it's chilling. It's absolutely chilling.
Well, the name Charles Keating must have crossed your
memory. He was a buddy of my buddies.
Yeah, right.
And matter of fact, the guy who was, he was a big client here and a friend of mine, he was probably the second biggest developer in the Scottsdale area. But he was smart enough to see the, you know, kind of what was coming. And I think he told me he sold how many hundred and some properties in the 8 months before it all happened? He was able to sell. So he got out with his skin, where Keating obviously was not as aggressive, and he was still in the middle of building stuff like the Phoenician and everything. But that ends up happening. If you read the who was the guy on CNBC, older gentleman that died a while back, but I liked him. Was it Bill Seidman?
I don't recall.
Bill Seidman, I think it was him. He was on the Resolution Trust board, and their attitude was just, I mean, I'm saying that at the end of the day, Wayne, it would probably was, up until maybe 2008, the single biggest shift of property from one group of people to another at like 30 cents on the buck.
And all of a sudden, one of the unsung stories about the savings and loan fiasco, and I've written about this, because look at the time frame. It was, you know, mid to late 80s when it really took effect. And we had the Iran-Contra scandal at the same time.
Right.
It turns out that a lot of these SNLs were being used by the CIA to launder money to fund all these off-the-book operations, what William Casey, CIA director, called off-the-book operations. There was a very large one in Oklahoma that was absolutely only there to launder money for the CIA, and it of course was one of the ones that went under. And actually, they got a bailout too. They should have been left to go under, but I don't think anyone went to jail. As a matter of fact, one of the guys, the principal owner, continued doing work for the CIA afterwards. He also owned some airlines that the CIA used for various nefarious purposes.
Well, wasn't that the rumor always on the one that Bush's kid, was it Neil Bush? Was on the board of the Silverado?
Yeah, Silverado SNL in Colorado. Same thing. We look a lot of, and not only Neil, but Jeb Bush was involved in some that went under in Florida, and you can imagine what they were involved with. Not only arms smuggling, but the white powdery stuff as well.
Well, you look back on it, it is so damn dirty. And I remember, way before your time, Eddie. There was a guy here in Chicago, and again, you're not supposed to say people that are attractive or unattractive, but this guy was a pretty unattractive human being in the sense that he was in a wheelchair, and his parents must have figured, no point in fixing him up. Horrendous teeth. The guy was named, remember a guy named Sherman Skolnick, Wayne?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. I may have spoken to him on the phone once.
Brilliant man. And he was an absolute thorn in Mayor Daley's behind, like the original Mayor Daley, like there was no tomorrow. He was always whatever, and he ended up writing a lot of papers regarding the Resolution Trust. And if you read the stuff, and I'm saying the guy was brilliant, and he can't still be alive, I don't think, but he
passed away a few years back. Yeah,
but here's what happened to this thing, Matty. We will not believe it. If you were like the right guy, you could apply to the government for. Was like what, $1 million or something? Help me out here with it. And they would actually give you your seed money if you were connected enough. This is what Washington now, not with Illinois. And then with every $1 million, they would loan you what, 10 times that to buy properties. Some incredible number, Wayne, was it? So
I don't recall, but I would imagine I know one real estate guy who got into politics. Probably who doesn't like government, but probably was involved with that.
Well, and then what ended up happening is the a lot of these areas in Arizona, the hotel, what was Keating's place, was the hell's the name of it? The Phoenician? Phoenician, right? What was his place? The
big one? Isn't that where
you stayed when you went down there, Manny, the Phoenician?
Venetian, I've stayed there.
Not the Vegas one. The one in the Phoenician, PH.
Oh, where's that at?
It's the one in Scottsdale.
I've not stayed there, no.
Anyway, it's a spectacular place. And they put together, my buddy was part of them putting these together for auction. Well, at the end of the day, they said, no, we're not going to auction off them individually or two at a time. We want people that can handle 10 of them. And some people backed by the Bush administration essentially were able to sweep in and buy the 10 properties at 30 cents on the buck versus the 50 that they had already negotiated or something like that. And there was an amazing amount, but these properties all shifted. That's what put GE Capital on the map, right, Wayne?
You know, and it's amazing that during that whole, I think it was actually over a week, it was 8 days, the national mourning for John McCain. I did not hear the name Charles Keating once. I think McCain was one of the Keating five along, Dee Consaney, his colleague in the Senate from Arizona, Alan Cranston, who used to be called the, the cadaver senator.
Well, but I guess where I'm going with this, and I'd like you to opine, of course, now I've been at it too long, but every time this happens, same thing in 2008, it's not like we help out the people that are there to keep their place. We always manage to have the people that get hurt never be seen or heard from again. There was a senator around the other day talking. He's got a soybean farm in either Dakota or someplace up there. And he goes, I still have soybeans on my farm from 2016 I can't sell. And he says, but the smaller guys can't carry the inventory, and they're just bankrupt and they're selling their places. At the end of the day, every time this happens, whether it's Trump, whether it's Reagan, whether whoever the hell puts this stuff together, at the end of the day, well, actually it was more Bush than Reagan, some people end up with other people's stuff at a big discount, and the other people are just out. And it just keeps getting more and more compartmental. I'm going to say the bigger farmers up in South Dakota will now be bigger, and there'll be 500 small guys out of business. And it's relentless. And we'll never help the little guy stay there, but we'll give the big guy a loan to buy the little guy out. Right?
Oh, certainly. And that's what's happening now with a lot. There's a lot of farmers. We're not seeing a lot of reports, but there are a lot of farmers, not just soybeans, but dairy farmers in Wisconsin and other places that are basically having to sell off the family farm. It, you know, been in their hands for, you know, multiple generations, and they just can't make a go of it because they did have, you know, for better or for worse with, you know, this global trade, they did have foreign markets that have been affected by this draconian tariff policy of Trump.
Yeah, and I mean, but the issue that we never help the person who's there. Is this in the Constitution someplace? I mean, even the people who had the houses in 2008, we never. I mean, Obama, if he was here, he'd sit here and he'd rattle off three big programs. I put these programs. You know what? I don't know a soul that was helped by one of those programs, which may just mean my vision's not far enough. And the simple fact is, a lot of people got other people's houses for 60 cents on the buck. And the banks, you couldn't just walk in there, Wayne, and say, I have money, I want to buy some stuff out of foreclosure, good luck with that. It went to certain minority real estate people, it went to the people in the know. It always ends up being sprinkled where you don't want it. I mean, Maddie, you and I couldn't go buy, if we walked into City Hall tomorrow and said, guess what, somebody just dropped $2 million on us, we want to be part of the tax sales in Inglewood, and we want to pick up 100 properties because, guess what, you know, you and Joe are planning for your grandkids or something. Now, it wouldn't do me any good because I'm too old, but, I mean, I got to believe that there's no room they let us in and let us part of that team. Do you think?
No, it's like George Carlin said, you know, it's a big club and you're, well, he added another word, and you're not in it.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is.
Well, that's right. I mean, so what do you make of with everything that's happening? And I've listened to Trump the other day, and I still hope the guy would somehow straighten up, but the people around him that believe that are all leaving.
They're either leaving or gone, yeah.
And But I mean, what is the end game to this now with the?
I don't think anyone knows, and I think that's the problem right now. And you see it with the shutdown and the continuing resolution that was agreed to unanimously in the Senate, and Trump listens to Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter, two people who are absolutely, in my opinion, well, Ann Coulter is totally reprehensible with the things she says. But he listens to these people, and he's not listening to his own advisors. That deal was done, and now Addison McConnell, otherwise known as Mitch the Turtle, says he's not going to revisit the same continuing resolution bill that was passed by his Senate by 100 votes unanimously.
Was that the one that called for $1.6 billion above the $1.3
billion? Yeah, that had some money for border security, and it's a game of semantics right now. The oddest tweet I saw the other day was where Trump was talking about walls and how we invented the wheel. And, I'm thinking, wait a minute, NASA, which is, of course, part of the shutdown, they just sent the first probe by any Earth spacecraft by the first binary planetoid called Ultima Thule. It looks like a huge peanut, but it's in the Kuiper Belt. And this is one of the most astounding feats of science in the history of humankind. And Trump's talking about the invention of the wheel. I don't think he's mentally. Yeah, I think he's insane. I don't know what's causing it, but this isn't just the Donald anymore. They always talk about the Donald because he had this reputation. This is a man who's 73 years old. And is just sounds like he's got some severe mental issues, his cabinet will go down in history, unfortunately not in a good way, for not invoking the 25th Amendment and having him removed from office.
Well, I don't. This whole idea the other day that even though these our allies sent troops are cheap, and the tariffs. They're screwing us on tariffs at the same time while making believe they're our friends by sending troops. I'm sitting there, I'm listening to this. I mean, don't try and equate people dying with tariffs. I mean, don't try and put that.
His moral. Well, I don't think he has a moral base. People have said that know him. They said he's not. It's not that he's immoral. It's that he's amoral. He doesn't understand any concept of morality and. And so he makes these comments, like not visiting the cemetery, the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One, and outside of Paris, I had an uncle, a great uncle, who died over there in that battle, and a lot of people took great exception to that, and this thing where he says he supports the military and veterans, it's all. Nonsense, because eventually we're going to start seeing not only veterans but a lot of other people really severely impacted by this shutdown. Now the VA is funded, but there's a lot of research that goes on by the National Institutes of Health where veterans take part in that, on Alzheimer's, on cancer research, on Parkinson's disease, and all this is going to, this is basically being shut down right now.
Wayne, yesterday I was maybe a little too, I don't know if we got any tweets, Matty, basically bitching at me, and some of it was legit, but as somebody who's seen my industry, meaning the trading floors and the things like that, just basically ripped apart, and all of the stuff given to three firms when nobody could possibly compete, even if you had money, the feeds they get from the stocks are preferred. So they're going to know the stock traded before you. And this is exchanges selling it to them. I know so many people that just never, all of a sudden one day, never got another paycheck, Wayne. I mean, to the point where I know people are living hand to mouth way more than they should be. And I don't ever want anybody, federal employee or anybody, to not get the paycheck they want. But why am I get this feeling that all these people are going to get paid. a month from now. The people that are off are not only going to get like a month off, they're going to get paid like if they were there. I mean, I don't want anybody to have to go to the payday loan because they didn't get a check this week. Yet it's not, hear the people at the federal level complaining about one delayed paycheck when a lot of the rules and stuff they put into place have caused literally thousands of friends of mine to never get another paycheck. I mean, they obviously don't have a feel for what they've done in some of these industries. I mean,
the cabinet secretaries are continuing to be paid, even though they're GS-6s and 7s. Their lower paid employees are not being paid. So,
but they will be. But they will be.
Fine. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm saying again. I'm not trying to be. But you know, it was always weird on the trading floor, and I don't know why I'm using that so much today. But if you were a market maker in an out trade, you lost 2, 3, 5 grand. You know, and a broker would say, "Well, that's the cost of doing business next to a broker." But if a broker ever lost an eighth on a 10 lot, which is $125, you'd swear the earth moved. I mean, it's all a question of point of view. You know what I'm saying? I mean, a guy from FINRA can walk into a firm and find them God knows how much for something you don't even know they did anything wrong, and that's okay. Yet if they're delayed on a paycheck for 2 weeks, it's like the big guy upstairs is pointing at them with a bad, you know, individually. I mean, the idea that you don't get paid for 2 weeks or a month and all of a sudden you get a double paycheck, I mean, I understand it's not nice and it's not planned for and all those things, but God, Wayne, it's not the end of the world compared to all the other people that are just playing out.
Well, we don't know. We've always seen the president sign the authorization to reimburse people for their back pay, but we've never had a person like Trump before. Mick Mulvaney basically is doubling down. He's saying, look, we don't care how long the government, you know, is out.
Where did they find that guy? Where did they find that guy?
Yeah. Well, he was a congressman from South Carolina. You know, this is the same state that produced Lindsey Graham, who, I mean, I don't get that guy. Maybe he's still upset he didn't win Miss South Carolina. But, you know, the whole thing, that Mulvaney was a member of the Freedom Caucus. These people don't want to bring government back. They want to destroy government. Now, this is what I call extreme libertarian, or people who spent too much time reading Atlas Shrugged. Ayn Rand is not what I consider to be the template for good governance. She complained about all government agencies, services. She thought government was an impedance, as she regularly cashed her Social Security check.
I know a lot of people like that, but I mean, you can. I don't know, Wayne. Sometimes I'm on both sides of this because I don't know what that makes me—Democrat or Republican or in the middle or someplace. But I mean, I was totally against the Consumer Protection Bureau, not because I don't think somebody, especially in this world where every industry becomes a cartel, that government doesn't need to be kind of watching out in some of these areas they've managed to destroy competition in. I just thought, when you're talking about banks, you've got the Federal Reserve, you've got the Comptroller of the Currency, you've got the FDIC, you've got the state people. How many more do you need? Do you need another 15,000 people with the desks and the procedures and the building and all this other kind of crap? Do you really need to quadruplicate this whole mess? I mean,
I think something can be said for the agencies we've had that aren't allowed to do their jobs of oversight, and what we've seen, and Trump's the worst, but he's not the only one where they start to take people from the regulated industries and put them in charge of the regulators. We see that with Ajit Pai at the FTC right now.
Yep.
I mean, he's only there to placate the big infotainment companies and big telecom.
Well, what's going to happen at the end of the day? And I'll ask you just to pontificate a little. What's going to happen when the only competitive business left in the world are saloons and farms, and every other one
is some kind of funeral homes?
Well, you know what? Chicago area, there's probably, I'm going to say I know a couple of guys. In fact, well, they buried my mother and stepfather I've known this guy forever. His name is Jack. So guess what his nickname was, Wayne?
I don't know.
Formaldehyde Jack.
Oh, well. Look, you know, we joke about, you know, Undertakers, but remember, they're the last guys that'll ever let you down.
but I mean, they were in the Southside neighborhood, and there's a couple of guys like this that still, well, he doesn't have his place, yeah. But a couple of them still have their, quote, place in, you know, in a bad neighborhood. But they really do stuff for it. I mean, their clientele has moved out of the city, but they still do the stuff for these guys. There's probably only one or two, funeral homes now that are, independently owned that these guys can do a funeral where they'll call their buddy up and say, hey, I got a funeral. Can I do it at your place? I'll pay you. I'll split it with you. And they say, okay. There's only a couple of those left. So there's been a huge consolidation in the funeral home business here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, everywhere.
You
know, where I grew up, I've been up there, and I've seen the old independent funeral homes. Now they all carry the same corporate name. I think that's happened across the country. But there's one thing that actually may bring me to Chicago. Maybe even I can get my colleague Andrew Craig out. But this indictment announced, I believe it was yesterday,
wow,
of at Burke, the alderman and attorney who used to be the tax attorney for Donald Trump.
When you say tax attorney,
issues because Donald Trump has real estate in Chicago.
Right.
I believe what we're seeing now is, and look, he may have been dirty, but I think the way Mueller is operating, Mueller's got all access to, you know, he's got Trump's income tax returns. He's got all that stuff from Michael Cohen. And we know that if Mueller finds something that isn't related to the Russia investigation, he turns it over to local U.S. attorneys. So what do they see? Maybe something where there was some hanky-panky with his property in Chicago. Well, who signed these papers? Oh, Burke. Okay, well, you know, forward that to the U.S. attorney for Northern District of Northern Illinois, and kaboom, they nail this guy. It could be, I'm not saying it is, but it could be, and we may have yet another U.S. attorney, because there's, Southern District of New York, there's Eastern Virginia, District of Columbia, Mueller, now maybe New Jersey, and now maybe Northern Illinois. I think this is going to mushroom into South Florida with U.S. attorneys there. Maybe Nevada, maybe Arizona.
Wayne, can we, we gotta dash off the break. Can you come back for maybe a few minutes after break?
Sure.
SP futures up 26, Dow futures up 225, NASDAQ futures up 6. Get a load of these numbers, guys, up 312. The payrolls are supposed to be 180. That's a big boom to the upside. So Jerome Powell maybe not as castigated as people think he is, or that he is being castigated. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Wayne Matson of WayneMatsonReport.com. S&P Futures up 27 now, Dow up 241, NASDAQ up 82. As this number came in at 312 with a 0.4% rise in earnings, but the unemployment rate went up to 3.9. So an awful lot of people will go over these numbers next week. We have Carl must have come out of the not working column or not in the labor force column because these are it's a lot of people both on the unemployed rolls, people looking, and people getting a job, which is pretty much interesting for, well, December. Carl will go through what makes December's numbers kind of odd, but still, those numbers are pretty good. Again, around the rest of the world, we've got over in Europe, DAX up 185, 1.8%, FTSE up 88, 1.3%, CAC around up 59, 1.3%. So now Asia, we got kind of double markets here. Nikkei down a bunch because they were the earliest. Down 452, 2.2%. Shanghai, however, up 52%. Hang Seng up 561, 2.2. So that they must have continued trading when the idea that we're going to get together with China yet again. So China and Japan are different. We'll see how that evens up on Monday. Oil up 107. Brent up 136. Natural gas back over $3 at 301. Gold slipping a little bit, only a dollar and a half. Copper with almost a 5-cent rally, first rally we've seen out of copper in a while. Silver down 3 cents. And how much gold still? $12.93. We'll see if it makes it $1,300 today or next week. Anyway, you got for us traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still relatively quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways as we have been all week, but we do have a crash in the area now. Eden's Expressway outbound just before Skokie Road. There is a crash blocking the two left lanes. Montrose out to Lake Cook Road is now 42 minutes as we have stopped traffic due to that significant crash blocking the two left lanes. So keep that in mind if you're heading up to the North Shore on the outbound side. Not affecting the Kennedy so much or the inbound side either, so that's good news. Eisenhower and Stevenson are very quiet for this type of time of morning. Dan Ryan, I-57 and Bishop Ford, same. Very quiet, low traffic volumes and travel times all week long. We just have that one area that crash up on the North Shore that's causing issues. Still working on the issue out in western suburban Wheaton. There was a water main break earlier this morning that has Roosevelt Road closed out in Wheaton, and that's between Woodlawn Street and Gables Boulevard, so avoid that area out in Wheaton. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, beautiful day and beautiful weekend in store. We'll be in the mid to upper 40s all weekend heading into early next week, so that's excellent. Today, partly cloudy skies, a high of 46. Right now, it is crystal clear and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, beautiful day down in the Valley of the Sun, sunshine, high of 65. Right now, it's clear and 36. In sports, Blackhawks lost an OT to the Islanders 3-2. Coyotes were off. Suns were off as well. Same with the Bulls, but the Bulls made a big trade, trading Justin Holliday to the Grizzlies for Marshawn Brooks, Wayne Selden, and 2 second-round picks. They also waived guard Cameron Payne, who they acquired last season. College hoops, Illinois lost at Indiana 73-65. Arizona State lost to Utah 96-86. Arizona beat Colorado 64-56. And of course, the Bears' first playoff game since 2010 is this Sunday afternoon at Soldier Field. It is the primetime Fox game, 3:40 p.m. Central Time kickoff. Bears hosting the Eagles, 6.5-point favorites. Bears safety Eddie Jackson, who has missed the last couple of weeks after twisting an ankle, tested it yesterday in practice. He is a game-time decision. Everyone else is expected to play, including Anthony Miller, who had the separated shoulder last week, and Taylor Gabriel, who had bruised ribs, they're both expected to play.
Chip, pop that right back in, put a brace on it, get in there.
That's right.
So I'm going to say you and I will both avoid Wheaton.
I would avoid Wheaton at all costs.
Yes.
Herb Lawrence is from Wheaton, so that gives you no reason to go there.
That's exactly
our buddy
right.
Herbie.
So, Wayne, I'm going to say that that the Trump Tower, because of how it's set up, needed virtually hundreds of zoning variances, all of which were orchestrated through the zoning committee by Alderman Ed Burke, as he does for everybody else. And in return, he's pretty much always been flat out there. Again, I'm not vilifying the guy. I'm just telling you what the everybody knows in Chicago. The quid pro quo is always to be have the tax stuff for the building done by his law firm. And he doesn't, as time has gone by, I don't know, maybe he's gotten careless enough to where he doesn't even hint at it. It's way more of a hint. And this particular thing I was reading about it yesterday, I wonder, it almost sounds like a setup, but it was a setup that he sort of made easy. And he actually followed it up by the guy saying no to the taxes, went out and had one of his people stop work because the permit wasn't right. So, I mean, he really pushed it with this, according to what I've read. And, you know, you've got to be a little more tongue-in-cheek than that, I would think. And I'm going to say that if you, for instance, I think, let me see if I can do this over the top of my head, Wayne, if you want to build up a zoning, Maddie, correct me if I'm wrong, 20 stories is the highest you can go really without a problem. If you decide you have a plaza on half the property to where there's open space, I think you can double the 20 to 40. And, I mean, there's all kinds of things that get you up to, what's Trump, Maddie, 80, 85? And there's not much of a plaza there or whatever. So I'm going to say there were a real lot of variances. And all those don't get through City Hall without the zoning committee, which I think Eddie Burke is in charge of. Is that a fair statement, Wayne?
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing with the Mueller investigation is, look, this guy could have gone on and on. I know, you know, hanky-panky in Chicago should not be on the front pages, but he could have gone on and on and not had any problems with the U.S. Attorney's Office. But just like with some of these attorneys and some of these political consultants who got involved with Trump, they probably would have never gotten in any trouble either, except this Mueller probe is very, very focused. And when he and his investigators, who are top-notch in their field of money laundering and all kinds of other issues, tax evasion, shell companies, all this type of thing. You know, he's looking at all of Trump's records and all of Cohen's records and all of Manafort and all these other people. And, you know, it's much easier to spot this stuff in under the aegis of this probe, where you get a guy like Burke in trouble. You get a guy like Von de Zwan, who was one of the attorneys. I think he did a week in prison, or you know, Papadopoulos, because you're under the microscope. The Trump organization is under the microscope, which means all of the people who worked for Trump as attorneys, including Burke, and we know about Cohen, and a few others we're going to hear about in the future, you know, they get nailed. And that may be what's playing out here.
Well, I mean,
by the way, Chief, Trump Tower is 98 floors. It's the second tallest building in Chicago behind Willis, ahead of Hancock, ahead of Aon, et cetera.
Well, so, I mean, it's, you know, it's narrow. Matter of fact, I had a new...
And it's right on the water, and there's all kinds of water zoning issues and corruption going on there, too, with pollution and stuff.
Well, you know, it seems this is kind of as our theme earlier in the show a little bit, Wayne, with Kevin, and a little bit with you, is that there's a lot of people who are... a real lot of people in this country that are straight, and yet can point you at there's always like a corrupt underbelly of just about everything that happens. I mean, even though everybody knows I was a tremendous apostle of the trading floor and open outcry and price discovery and customers trading with customers is a way to really discipline the system. I could have pointed you probably at an underbelly in a few areas, the same in the Board of Trade for sure. I mean, the more you know, the more you... And I would say that the trading floor was 90% legit. You know, it wasn't 100%, and I could have pointed you a few spots. But anytime somebody looks at... I mean, you and I probably could have told anybody at a show 5 years ago, before Trump even was alive politically, that if somebody looked at all these, whatever you want to call them, carpetbaggers, scalawags, whatever, that go from country to country and get money from the Ukraine guy to mess with the businesses in the U.S. And then the U.S. guy is trying to get into Russia, so he's paying some guy off in there to build something in Russia, and then it's all gangland over there. That there's this huge mass of people sort of in the middle of this mess that if anybody ever took a hard look at them, would be winging out subpoena after subpoena. And to a certain extent, Trump has done that to these guys. That they mentioned Cohen had cab medallions here in Chicago, I knew he was cooked. I knew he was cooked because I'm sitting there thinking the Russians bought the cab medallions. He did some work for Russia. They paid him in cab medallions, and they've been giving him cash or something on the side, and he's never once gotten, you know, he didn't pay any taxes over here, and he's screwed. Sure enough. I used to drive a cab, and I lived across the street from Mike's Rainbow, where all the cabbies used to stop and have coffee and stuff in the morning. I talked to these guys. So it's an area I knew something about, you know, in some areas I don't know anything about. So I knew the minute he ducked into there, this guy, he wasn't coming to that one with his nose up, you know what I'm saying?
He had all these LLCs too to kind of front for all these medallions he owned, and you know, in Brooklyn and you know, New York and Philadelphia as well, and in Moscow.
Yeah.
I mean, there are stories about how corrupt the taxi cab business is in Moscow. It's all, you know, mob operated, all gangland type stuff, and you know, and Trump, you know, it's obvious he was using these medallion LLCs as a money laundering operation, and this is what vexed the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, that, you know, hey, you're cooperating with Mueller, and that's fine, but you didn't cooperate fully with us, because he didn't want to get into all the nefarious activities that were taking place in New York.
All right, we got
Chicago as well.
We got to let you go, bud. You got to come on out here, because we're going to have an incredible guest here, hopefully, if he shows up for this conference that I understand he's been invited to, not by us. A guy who's a curator at Bletchley Park. And there's a guy.
Huh?
You know, Bletchley Park, where the geniuses were during the war, decoding the Enigma code.
Alan Turing being one of them.
I think this is his son.
Oh.
And if he's in Chicago, maybe that's the week you guys want to come out here, because I'd love to have an adult beverage with you guys and this guy together.
Oh yeah, keep us posted. Alan Turing is an icon at the National Security Agency.
I think this is his son.
Anyway,
bud, you take care of yourself, and thank you. We'll have you on soon, Mr. John Neal. How are you, buddy?
Hey, good morning. How you doing, Tom?
All right. Sorry to push you off a little bit, but Wayne was kind of on a roll, and you're going to tell us.
No problem.
You're going to tell us how you made all kinds of money yesterday, and you got long last night on the close, and somebody leaked the jobs numbers to you, and you're fat and happy this morning.
You and me both, exactly. Yeah. But not at all surprising, to be honest with you. So,
by the way, we have had a nice last 6 weeks in our gold and silver, finally.
Yeah, absolutely, and got a little bit... out on my GDX position, so a little bit of pullback today. I ought to be golden today, so it's just about perfect. Now, after today, you can start going back up again, if you follow me.
Yeah, well, so you sold, 21 and a halfs?
Yeah, exactly. So, right. I'll be able to roll them and things like that. I mean, I wasn't worried anyhow, as far as that goes. I mean, there were definitely enough premium to do something with them anyhow.
Yeah, you could have got them up to the 22s easy enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, but this little dip today is just going to make it just a little bit better.
And you might as well strive for perfection, even though it's hard. It's elusive, but you might as well at least.
Right. You know, like you said, it's a win-win. But it was better of the two alternatives. I'll put it to you that way, Tom.
What do you make of? Here's I guess the question. We've been asking it from everybody, and Matty's probably tired of me asking it, but we have clearly a couple of positive things. If the Fed were to say, you know, we're data dependent, we're not locked in, a couple more raises and we'll see what happens, I think that relieves a little pressure, at least in some people's minds, not so much in mine. And if there is, you know, some movement afoot on the Chinese front, because it looks like China is damn near imploding over there, and we're not doing so hot here. Although these jobs numbers are interesting, although I'll bet Wayne's going to poke a hole in what I'm saying with some kind of an adjustment.
Carl, not Wayne.
I'm sorry, Carl.
Isn't there always?
Yeah, well, you know what? Well, Carl digs into the, you know, he digs into them deeper than most people. And, so I'm saying, how much, say we have the China call, and in 90 days we actually do get some sort of either a deal or some sort of a, I don't know how the whole deal gets together with the demands both sides are making, but let's say there's progress. So we get to play the Trump call for, the Trump-China call for the 10th time, and we get somewhat of a bounce back. I guess, John, how much damage has been done, and how much, shall we say, slowdown worldwide is there that really has nothing to do with either the tariff or the Fed stuff, other than the fact that circumstantially it's kind of around the same time? I mean, this slowdown, I mean, we talked with Kevin earlier, the slowdown with Apple, it just happened to start on October 3rd. Kevin was very, and there were some people on CNBC yesterday, were very adept at saying, hey, come on, it's $1,000. It used to be every 2 years people got the new phone, didn't care how much it cost. Now all of a sudden you do care how much it costs, and the price is just too high to have, especially people in China paying $1,000 a pop when you're making 10 cents an hour. The whole model was starting to, quote, break down somewhere. It just so happens the stock turned on the same day the Fed said something on October 3rd. But it was, if you looked at it, you probably would have seen that there were cracks in the foundation, you know, March, May, June, you know, type of thing. So how much, in your estimation, how much of the damage is just plain damage that a fix in China and a, shall we say, a change in tone at the Fed can't fix, and how much of it do we go back to old highs? I mean, I'm in the 50% is real, 50% Memorex at this point. Where are you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's too far from the truth, and maybe even higher on Memorex, to be honest with you. I might even go 70-30, to be honest with you. One of the problems is, and I think we will come back, and what I always call, and I think what we call, kind of they're artificially, you know, propping us up with the, you know, some of this news. You know, like you say, you get this jobs report, Carl will be able to poke holes in it, like you said, and rightfully so. That, you know, we've been talking about this for years and, you know, years and years. The big worry I have for folks out there is, the more we keep doing this kind of stuff, once it does take that bigger leap down, Tom, it's going to be vicious, I think.
Let's pick on one stock that's basically got its ass kicked, for lack of a better term. Apple. Apple's down $440 billion since October 3rd. So we're talking November, December, January. We're talking, what, 91 days. Today's the 4th? Right, or today the 3rd. 90 or 91 days, depending on and we've outlined problems just now and all over the place with Apple. Okay, now the question is, how much more? I mean, is it worth 140? Is it worth 120? Is it worth, you know, where are we here? I mean, I gotta believe that if somebody liked Apple and dropped a $1 million check on my desk or yours, that I don't really have a problem getting to Apple here in something akin to our protected index program, where if I buy the puts and sell some calls, I don't see this as a bad entry point. Would I do it just here? I'll spend your $1 million on Apple tomorrow with no protection. The answer is no. I don't know that I'd buy extra puts here, Jen. I'd probably just go 1-to-1. I mean, I don't know that one.
I would put a lot of, and I agree totally with what you were saying. I put a lot of stocks in that category that, hey, you know, we don't exactly know, you know, where this thing is going, but, on this pullback, you know, to buy into it, get these people that haven't been to start, you know, protecting things like this. You definitely can write some good calls on Apple, so, you know, no problem there, you know, as far as that goes. So, you know, play with it like that. And, I think it'd be, you know, a wonderful strategy. But, you know, the key with what you said, Tom, is obviously to protect these things. So.
Yeah, and I mean, but I wouldn't. I honestly don't. I mean, I'm not a big Apple aficionado, but I think down here, I mean, there's a lot of cash in the company. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it slipped to 130, 135. But you know what? If we got in there and we bought the 44 puts, right, and all of a sudden it went to 35, we rolled the puts down, we'll just reset. And, you know, and we'd be, when you're protected, you're not afraid of that, of getting that, you know, buying the rights, not getting a spot where it won't go lower before, because you've sort of protected yourself from it. Plus, you and I are professionals. We've been doing this for a bazillion years. We're not egotistical enough to know that when we buy it at 144, that's the bottom tick. Right? I mean, the bottom tick might be 140, it might be 135, it might be 125, but as long as we can roll our put down, get some of that money back. But I guess I don't feel here the urge to buy extra puts. You know, I mean, in 2000...
No. I agree with you there too, is I'm more in the avenue of thinking that we're gonna, you know, possibly meander along, and you know, other than yesterday, I thought, okay, maybe we're starting to get, you know, hairless volatility, you know, the prior couple days or whatever. Boy, looking at this so short term, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But you know, I think you're correct there.
Well, I mean, there were times in 2000, and you know, one of the things that got us, actually in 2007, one of the things that got us Money Manager of the Year that year, John, is we were up so high in the market that I put people's money to work at the top, but the volatility was so cheap that I just said, boy,
right,
I don't really want to buy the market up here, but the volatility was so cheap, I said, what's the difference? I'll buy the market here, but I'll buy 50% more puts. They were trading for like a 9 volatility or a 10. Well, now they're not. Now you're talking about 25. They're you know, you're talking about a real price. I mean, you're paying to play. But I don't really feel the urge to you know, if I needed to buy 100 puts to buy 150, I don't really think here to you. I mean, especially in Apple. Now, you know, some other areas maybe so, but same thing with these oil companies. I mean, we've had some, I don't know, on your end, your clients, but on this end, we've had some clients that know more about the oil patch individual stocks than I do, are sniffing around at some of these stocks, and they're selling some puts at levels where if they end up with the stock, they're real happy with the dividend rate. So say a stock, you know, was 60 and now it's 40, they're selling, you know, whatever, 35 puts or something, cash secured. So if they end up with the stock at 35, they're happy. Now the only problem with that is if the you know, it's like saying when GE was 32, if it ever got under 30, I'll buy it. But when it goes under 30, as somebody said on TV the other day, it's not anything you and I don't feel like once in a while, John. Somebody was saying that it was GE. The lady, she goes, well, my boss used to say if GE ever got under 30, we'd want to buy it. And some,
I'll sell it all we can, yeah, take, right?
And then some other guy in the room popped his head up and he said, let me help you. If it ever gets under 30, the reasons why it's under 30 will be so bad that you don't want it. Right? I mean, right now you can say, you know, the S&P is, you know, is whatever, and I'll buy it down another 5%. But God knows that could be next week, and some other big news item could come flying in where you go, I won't touch this one with your 10-foot pole, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, have you ever really seen, Jan, this things going around like this? Especially, what are we, 2 years away from a year where there was never a 1% move in a day? Now we got stuff priced for 1% move from noon to 3 o'clock. I mean, I thought we'd come back with some volatility, but I never thought this would happen.
No, nor did I. Pretty unprecedented. You know, like I said, it would be, you know, nice for that to, you know, back off for a while and, you know, meander around a bit, but it is what it is, Tom.
So you guys are on the mend out there? You fired your coach? How many coaches are gone, Matty? 6?
8 coaches are no longer with their teams that started the team started the year as their head coach.
But how many? Well, 2 went during the year or 3?
1 went during the year. That was Hugh Jackson in Cleveland.
Well, so did McCarthy.
And McCarthy, yes. So 2 during the year and then 6 either the last day of the season or the day after.
Really? And then the guy in Arizona was there, what, 1 year?
That's correct.
That's that much of a chance?
No,
and not much of a chance at all, you know, considering what he was given.
So literally 25% of NFL head coaches were fired that were coaches at the beginning of the season.
So who do you think would be some combination of Solomon and the Holy Spirit? Could anybody have possibly turned that Arizona team around in 1 year? They had nothing.
That's correct. But if
but as they always say, that's a scapegoat to, you know, keep the fans interested or get them interested, or, you know, I mean, the coach is a scapegoat a lot of times more anything of legitimacy.
Should we put our hat in the ring and be the two-headed monster?
We couldn't do any worse.
SP Futures down 32. NASDAQ Futures down 93. Up 32. NASDAQ up 90. I'm so used to saying down. Dow up 298. We'll hope we hang in there today. At least get back half what we lost yesterday. Back on Monday. Thank you, John. Thank you, Matty.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.